AM 790 WNIS. Sometimes I'll hear some of the spots that we run on WNIS, and after a while you'll find out, well, what is this person all about? I'd like to know more about this person. I'm sure you feel that way about it. I remember when I met Dick Olenich, you know, and he always says, is he really just a spokesman or also owner of the company? No, he's actually owner of the company. He's not just a spokesperson. He's the guy doing it. And I always enjoy those commercials that we hear from Joe Cordell, and I find them interesting. And so I said to one of our sales executives, one of our fine sales managers, Miss Ginger, I said, I'd love to talk to this guy in the air. She said, I'll set it up for you, and we're going to do it right now. Good morning, Joe Cordell. How are you today, sir?
I'm good. Thank you, Tony, for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on because I've always enjoyed your spots. I like the way you present yourself. And where are you from originally?
I'm originally from southeastern Kentucky, an hour north of Knoxville, right on the Kentucky-Tennessee border.
Okay. Because I hear your accent and I find it intriguing, and the listeners will bust my chops, Mr. Cordell, because I'm from New York and New Jersey. I grew up in New York and New Jersey, and I'll get it because of the way I say giant. I don't say giant, and I don't say museum. And I think you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
I do. I can hear a little bit of that Yankee accent in your voice.
And I don't hear any at all in your voice, I'll tell you that right now. You know, I always find it intriguing, and I had a lot of buddies who were lawyers. I wish I had the intellectual discipline or commitment to actually have been a lawyer. I think it's probably a fascinating job. And how did you get into it? Now, do you come from a family of lawyers, or did little Joe you were a big fan of Perry Mason? What made you decide to get into that particular line of work?
I was influenced, I guess, by the fact that some characters that I read as I grew up, and of course in my small town that I grew up in, which is a small little town in the mountains, lawyers were at that time, believe it or not, respected.
Yeah.
And I was ambitious there weren't any lawyers in my family, and I was ambitious and I felt, well, that would be a worthy thing to do. And so I go down this road, and I don't know to what extent it's an intellectual worthy thing. It's kind of, some would argue it's more intellectual mischief than anything else. But okay. But it's been a great career, and I've really liked the fact that I've been able to focus on an area that I was passionate about. Mm-hmm. I feel sorry for lawyers for whom it's just a living.
Yes,
and albeit perhaps a highly paid living for some of them. But to the extent you're doing something every day, whether it's shuffling papers or something else that you can't truly get excited about, that's not something I would want, even if a high paycheck were attached to it.
Well said. I appreciate your point, Mr. Cordell. Now, one of the things, and you are one of the premier lawyers when it comes to divorce, and one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, how do you divorce yourself emotionally from it? To me, that would be, you see these people, and we all know what it's like when people are going through divorce. Sometimes it is a living hell. Families are falling apart. You feel like you failed. The kids are going one way. How does Joe Cordell, how do you keep it all above board, keep from getting emotionally into it? I know you've been doing it a long time, but when you first started, how did you do that?
Well, there's this wonderful line that you want to walk, and you don't want to fall off either side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Falling off one side of the line is where you become too detached and clinical, such as doctors who have this total absence of an emotional involvement. And while they might be good technicians, there's something lacking in the relationship that, doctors are sometimes notorious for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think lawyers can get to that point. On the other side of the line, though, falling the other way is where you allow yourself to become so committed personally in a particular case, though its circumstances may be especially compelling, that you'll just flame out. I mean, if you invest that much of yourself in a family crisis, of clients that come through the door, then you just flame out. You have a short career.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I tell our lawyers, we have almost 300 lawyers at this stage. And
wow. And
so I tell our lawyers that you want some personal commitment. You want to feel some skin in the game. Mm-hmm. And you want to take it to some extent personally when our client experiences a failure or experiences an incredible success. But at the same time, you've got to strike a balance, or you just can't make it through your career.
Mm-hmm. When you first are getting, when a person is going to be divorced, Mr. Joe Cordell, people, you get very nervous and you might make some rash movements. What are some of the biggest mistakes that a person might make when they're going into a divorce?
Boy, how long do we have for this answer?
As long as you need, Mr. Cordell.
Well, you know, there are several mistakes I can mention that are notorious. I guess one of them I would mention is guys will sometimes allow themselves to get so upset and so expressive physically, and I'm not suggesting to the level of abuse, but I'm talking about short of that even. And that's where guys will often find themselves on the receiving end of an order of protection. And that can haunt them in a lot of ways through the divorce process. Mm-hmm. And so guys have to be especially scrupulous about assuring that they don't allow their anger to get ahead of them. You know, they don't have the luxury like their wives typically do of being able to yell and raise their voice and do things. Because when a guy does that, it provides an opening for their opponent, and this person has become their opponent at this stage, mm-hmm. for their opponent to obtain an order that will haunt them, not only with respect to the outcome of the case itself, but can have ramifications in their careers, yes. depending on what they do for a living. Mm-hmm. Additionally, guys will often impetuously leave the house. Yeah. And sometimes it's simply because their wife points to the door, you know, as if they're the Cocker Spaniel, yeah. you know, go. And right. And so the guys will, you know, pack their bag and leave. Now, it's possible that decision will not turn out to be strategically disadvantaged, mm-hmm. disadvantageous, but often it is. And it depends on a case-by-case basis. But too often guys are inclined to simply respond to the emotions of the moment, and sometimes those decisions are not the best.
Mm-hmm. That certainly makes sense, Mr. Cordell. Joe Cordell is our guest right now. Now, one of the things that one of the people, I guess, who works for you sent me, and it was interesting to me because I read some blurb somewhere, Mr. Cordell, that January, and I was wondering because it's so cold, and when people are getting together on the Internet, as so many young people do now, that it's the biggest month for it. And then I hear from your folks that it's also January is divorce month. Tell me more.
Well, you know, I'll tell you that while people sometimes associate a stereotype with guys, one in which they have perhaps in their 40s, they've met somebody younger, that traditional stereotype is, you know, a secretary or something, but uh-huh. but whatever it might be, it is true that there are certain stereotypes, or I'll use the word patterns, that appear in divorce. And one sometimes I'll concede is that guys, you know, as they're later in their career, will sometimes divorce and be attracted to someone who's 5-7 years younger,
oh, yeah.
on average. But it's the other stereotype that Cordell is really built on, that other pattern that doesn't get movies made about it, that doesn't get the publicity that it should. And that's what women do. And women typically, when they're choosing divorce, they will be in their 30s, typically 35 to 40. Hmm. Often they have met someone, maybe in the workplace, could be elsewhere, but they make a decision that they want out at that stage. That's a vulnerable period for women in terms of a pattern of behavior in divorce. And very often our clients come from that. They're on the receiving end of a petition for divorce, and their wife at that stage is wanting to move on. Now, the kids, think about the ramifications in terms of ages of kids.
Yeah.
In that scenario, often kids are young, but the wife feels that she should have not only custody of the kids, but she may ask for maintenance. She's probably wanting the better half of 50% of the property. And those are the circumstances that often inspire our clients to come in to our office and say no, that they want to pursue, you know, an aggressive position in terms of protecting their role mm-hmm. as a parent. Mm-hmm. So that often women are more, and I am stereotyping here, but I can stereotype guys too. I'm just responding to patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And often what I see in those situations is that the women are more thoughtful in their decisions. Hmm. They may be moving from a situation that, at least historically, was less secure financially. And so they do that with more forethought, quite frankly, than that other pattern of guys who are older and maybe later in their career, I should say, 45 to 50, mm-hmm. and are moving on. Often those guys are less inclined to plan, interestingly enough, though they plan their careers, they often don't plan that decision. By contrast, in that other pattern, when women are involved, they're younger, the kids are younger, and often their plans do involve some forethought. Yeah. And that forethought is often implemented in the first quarter of the year.
You know, and one of the things I remember reading about divorce many years ago, Mr. Cordell, is you got to be careful not to be telling the children bad things about the person you're getting divorced from, because then it becomes a war on the kids, and it's so confusing for them.
It is, and it's called alienation, and alienation now in virtually every state has statutes that forbid it.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. But now it's one thing for it to exist on the books and another for courts to respond. I will tell you that inherently it's insidious. It's insidious because it's difficult to prove. And it can be as subtle as simply mom and grandma standing at the sink in the kitchen or somewhere else, and mom says something about dad, maybe not particularly harsh, but yet, you know, grandma will look and raise her eyebrows and or maybe say something, well, we know about that. And it's those five, six, seven, 8-year-old kids tend to be able to pick up the significance of that remark. I mean, if dad's running late, then that could have been the topic of conversations. So the message is dad's irresponsible, dad's unreliable. That is alienation, but it's occurring in one of those less flagrant ways than where, you know, dad's a deadbeat. Rather than often saying that expressly, sometimes it is said expressly, quite frankly, but to the extent it isn't, that's an example of alienation, and it's difficult to prove.
Now, it's interesting to me what attributes, Mr. Cordell, make people a success in whatever line of work. You're a great success. You have hundreds of people working for you. What would you find, and once again, it's not a simple answer, what are some of the recurring themes or attributes that make for a successful lawyer?
Well, I can speak more for litigators.
Okay.
And there are a couple of personalities that you find, at least a couple, but I'll choose to this division. On the one side are those who might prefer to do a practice in which it's a more transactional practice, as we call it, in which they might prepare documents. Those documents may be corporate. They may be estate planning in their variety of contexts in which that happens. Then there's those others that are litigators, and those are the ones who enjoy the competition in the courtroom, who like to joust in that way. So I think that lawyers who love litigation, and we try to find them early in their careers, and sometimes difficult to pick them out at the starting gate. And so sometimes you will bring somebody on board that you think is cut out for a career of that sort of competition on a daily basis. And it's a competition, as we mentioned moments ago, in which the subject matter, you know, is of great importance to our clients. I would argue the greatest importance for domestic relations lawyers' clients than for any other clients, meaning including criminal law, including law involving hundreds of millions of dollars, because at the end of the day, when you have on the table everything that's important, including that those millions of dollars of interest that the husband may or may not have in a business, including his children, which are far more important, including the emotions, that maelstrom, you know, that stew of anger and frustration and jealousy and betrayal and all those things that are associated with divorce. So being a successful litigator in divorce means being prepared to carry on your shoulders, you know, that level of responsibility, and be able to do it day in and day out. So there's a certain capability from an emotional standpoint that we talked about moments ago that has to accompany the intellectual willingness to invest the time to study and learn the facts of a particular case as well as the underlying law. So, you know, I guess like a lot of things in life, being successful, you know, there's no one or two components. It's a recipe with a variety of ingredients, ingredients that might vary in quantity from case to case, but yet you find produces a wonderful result despite that variation among, you know, several different combinations.
And it sounds to me like you ain't working no 8-hour days.
No, and that's a good point. Is, you know, this is one of those careers that it's a profession, was what it was known as classically, and it was one of those professions like medicine where it was understood that when you make a decision to enter this field, whether or not you prosper financially, you're making a commitment that is more than a 40-hour week, and that in some cases it will interfere with your time with your family. Mm-hmm. But that's the road that you choose when you choose certain professions, and this is one of them.
My buddy, Professor Brad Jacob, he teaches constitutional law at Regent University, and he was my guest last week, Mr. Cordell, and somebody asked him, what's your favorite lawyer movie? I'm going to ask you, what are your favorite lawyer movies?
Well, To Kill a Mockingbird. That inspired me as a child. Sure. When you asked me earlier, you know, what made me think lawyers were really cool. Well, that character, yeah. Atticus Finch, was huge in my mind. I liked The Verdict with Paul Newman. Yeah. I thought that was a great movie.
It's Newman's birthday today. I loved Paul Newman. I'm with you on that, 100%. And To Kill a Mockingbird, Gregory Peck. Who's better than Gregory Peck, right?
That's right. You know, I wish I had his charisma and his judgment.
You sound like you're doing all right, Mr. Cordell. You sound like you're doing all right. Well,
I get by.
I'm sure you do. I want to thank you so much for getting up early and talking to us this morning. I find you to be a fascinating individual, and I'm sure our listeners do too. And I also want to thank you so much for advertising on WNIS.
Well, you know, I'm proud to be on, Tony. I know you have a wonderful reputation in the industry, and I would love to talk to you about success too. But in any case, I thank you for having me on.
Well, if you'd like to come back on and sometime, we'll be glad to have you back on. We'll give you a shout-out and what's convenient for you, and we'll talk about success and anything you feel like talking about. I think that would be great.
Anytime. Thank you very much, Tony.
Thank you, Mr. Cordell. Have a good day, sir. Thank you very much. That's Joe Cordell right here, and we'll get him back on for you. He wants to talk about success? I'd love to do that. What makes people successful? That might be very interesting. Okay, that's the guy. I thought that would be interesting, and I was right. Because I hear the guy in the air, and just something about him, I thought, this guy has such a fascinating presentation. And he knew what we were talking about, being from Kentucky and everything way out there. But I thought that was very good. I really enjoyed talking to him. That's Joe Cordell, C-O-R-D-E-L-L, and one of our great listeners. Also, her son is actually working for him. But if tell him anytime that's convenient. If he wants to come on for an hour and take calls or whatever, we'll do that. You know what I mean? All right, 749 at AM 790 WNIS.